We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Wednesday night, February 21st, 2024. You might be wondering, another Sox Machine Podcast? Yes, our latest episode, I sat down with Crane Chicago reporter Justin Lawrence, who broke the initial story of what Jerry Reinsdorf of the Chicago White Sox were asking for in a new stadium proposal in the South Loop. Then Jerry Reinsdorf went to Springfield to chat with the Speaker of the House and the Senate President. The talks were cordial, but nobody from the government side showed their cards in favor or against what was being proposed. On Wednesday, Jerry Reinsdorf had lunch with Crane Chicago's Greg Hines, who always does an amazing job of getting the fine details of anything that's going on in the city of Chicago. Here is the latest from Hines' reporting. Financing the stadium will cost $1.1 billion, but there's an extra $900 million needed that we haven't discussed for infrastructure work. A reminder from the previous episode, Related Midwest already has $551 million in TIP funds reserved to help build a new CTA red line stop on the property and move train tracks around. They would need, it sounds like, an additional $900 million for the rest of the infrastructure on the property. The goal is to have a new stadium built and ready for the 2028 season, which is hyper-aggressive. So the White Sox need $1.8 to $2 billion to build a new stadium. The 78 project will need an additional $2 billion to build a hotel, apartments, condos, and a retail section. We thought the ask was $1.2 billion a day ago, but it's really $4 billion for the entire project to match what Related Midwest and Jerry Reinsdorf are pitching to lawmakers. The Chicago City Council met on Wednesday, and after the meeting, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, when speaking to reporters, did not shut down any of the proposed financing ideas for this project. According to the Chicago Tribune, he's keeping the door open, which is interesting. Outside of the ask is why Jerry Reinsdorf is making this request now for this location. From Hines' report, the ask from Jerry Reinsdorf is threefold. One, Jerry Reinsdorf does not believe the current location in Bridgeport can generate the type of revenue to sign top ball players. Two, Jerry Reinsdorf is worried that without a stadium deal, when he passes away, his son Michael Reinsdorf, the current Chicago Bulls president, will sell the team. Whoever buys the White Sox could move them out of Chicago, say Nashville, which Jerry keeps bringing up no matter how many times our Jim Margulis has said that's not going to happen. The third point, a new White Sox stadium will anchor the significant development in the South Loop of Chicago, which Related Midwest is still pitching the idea. It will generate $4 billion in economic impact and $200 million in tax revenue. These estimates come from private studies paid for by, you guessed it, Related Midwest. Jerry's ultimate endgame is moving the White Sox from Bridgeport to the South Loop by the 2028 season and signing a 30 or longer year lease with the ISFA, the Illinois Sports Facility Authority, which would keep the White Sox at Chicago. That's at least his pitch, and I know I'm not alone when I say I don't buy it. I live in Bridgeport. I drive through the South Loop and this stadium's planned location often. I just don't know how you generate this type of revenue in this location. The entire South Loop would need to dramatically change to come close to these numbers. Also, I think if the White Sox do move out of Bridgeport, another developer is going to buy these parking lots and build them out, as Chinatown overflow is already taking over Bridgeport. There's a great need for more housing options in the neighborhood. The White Sox could move, and then you'll have what looks like a ballpark village next to an empty ballpark. That's just my opinion, but there are experts in this field that have been covering public finance sports stadiums for years, and our James Fegan sat down with Neil DeMaus.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, we're very thrilled to have here on the Sox Machine podcast the award-winning journalist and the co-author of the seminal work on stadium financing's Field of Schemes, and the proprietor of the website that keeps us up to date on stadium finance and what's really being said, Neil DeMaus. Neil, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Since I perused your website, I know that you're kind of already well-versed on what the most recent White Sox ask is, but I guess to start out, what kind of jumped out at you at the potentially record-setting request in public financing that they made?
The number is really kind of the biggest eye-popping part of it, right? I mean, this is a site that already, as I understand it, had about $700 million worth of property tax kickbacks attached to it when it was first approved a couple years ago. And now they're talking about potentially $1 billion in between hotel taxes and sales taxes. Hotel taxes citywide, sales taxes just on the site, that would be kicked back to provide that. So you put those together and you got $1.7 billion. And that's a number that, you know, as large as some of the other numbers we've been seeing, you know, $1.2 billion for the Titans Stadium and public money. I think it was about $1.1 for the Buffalo Bills. $1.7 is an awful lot, especially, you know, when the current stadium, whatever else you want to say about it, it's not ancient, right? We're not talking about like the Bills, who are playing in a stadium that's 50 years old. This is something that's fairly modern and was redone not all that long ago. So, you know, I guess the other thing that stood out was the fact that Jerry Reinsdorf sort of kicked this all off by going and visiting the mayor of Nashville when he was down there for the owners' meetings. And, you know, that's something that teams do all the time, but it's especially remarkable because Jerry Reinsdorf kind of invented this, right? You know, the first time that they were trying to get a new stadium back in the 80s, when the Illinois legislature was debating it, Reinsdorf went down to Tampa Bay, met with the, you know, elected officials there at the time that Tampa Bay didn't have a team yet, and came back and then got the stadium approved. And then later said, you know, he wasn't serious. When asked whether he was serious about it, said, well, a savvy negotiator creates leverage. So, you know, it's kind of remarkable that he's using the exact same trick over again, even after revealing how it was done.
I thought it was interesting a choice, especially because it seemed like the Nashville mayor had been pretty outspoken in the Tennessee Titans deal about being resistant to being willing to offer up public funding. I don't know how much of it is posturing, but it seemed like a particularly unlikely bid that he was making, but still something that he found purposeful to do.
It doesn't have to be serious. That's sort of one of the things I think that sports team owners have realized is you don't have to have a serious move threat. You just have to have, you know, something that you can say. I remember the Pittsburgh Penguins, Mario Lemieux, talking about moving to Kansas City. That wasn't going to happen either. You know, we've seen the Diamondbacks owners sort of talk vaguely about moving to Las Vegas or Utah or Vancouver or someplace like that. So it's, you know, it's something you just sort of throw out there, and it almost doesn't matter whether or not you're serious. You just need to get people talking about, well, we can't risk it. And you know, that at least sort of opens the door to conversations. You know, I was just looking at a Facebook group about the Royal Stadium controversy, another one that's going on right now. And everybody was saying, you know, would it be terrible if the team left? No one has even rumored where the Royals might go, right? They haven't been talking about going anywhere outside of the Kansas City area, but already it's like, you know, oh, what would happen if the team moved out of town? So it's kind of just a thing that sticks in people's brains. People have watched Major League too much or something.
My next bullet point was to ask if the size of the ask is unusual. And obviously it is, because it's, you know, record setting. Obviously these figures are always accelerating, but it's both the scale of it, really a new plane, or is it kind of in keeping with what we've been seeing?
I would say a little of both, right? In that it is absolutely a, you know, a new benchmark in terms of the ask. But we've been seeing numbers go up and up and up for years, and especially in the last few years, right? I mean, it wasn't that long ago that the Raiders were getting $750 million from Nevada for a new stadium. And it was like, wow, that's a crazy number. And then the Bills and the Titans blew past the $1 billion barrier. And, you know, the Orioles are potentially getting $1 billion. It's, you know, the sky is really the limit right now. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a crazy number. But, you know, again, you don't get if you don't ask. And I think that they clearly see, well, this is something they can sell not just as a stadium, but as a whole new neighborhood. And it's not, you know, aside from the hotel taxes, it's not raising taxes. It's just kicking back taxes that otherwise would go to the general fund. So, yeah, I mean, I think that they are, you know, Reinsdorf and the White Sox execs are thinking this is something that we can at least get a hearing on, right? Which clearly already just happened. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, we'll see how well it goes. But, you know, a big part of the stadium deals is kind of the notion of anchoring, right? The same way that, you know, companies will sell a product by saying, you know, you would pay $79.99 for this in a store, but we're offering to you for $19.99, right? As soon as you hear that $79.99, then you're like, oh, wow, well, $19.99 isn't so bad. And it could be possible that they will come back and say, okay, we're not going to ask for, you know, $1.7 billion. We'll ask for $1.2 billion. And everyone's like, oh, wow, that's great. We're saving $500 million.
Having worked in both TV news and sports news, I feel like there's been a lot of cases where you're handed stories where, because you don't have competence in or experience in the industry, you just kind of get this figure and you kind of repeat it. So I feel like the Reinsdorf or the White Sox claiming there's no new taxes, probably there's not the level of governmental financial literacy present in a lot of sports journalism. I mean, I'm straining for it. Like, at least I know the trick is coming. How do you unpack what that really means and how often is that kind of that tact used?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard for sports journalists who don't have necessarily the financial background. And then it's also hard for news journalists, right, who don't have the sports background and don't understand all the ins and outs of, you know, how financing, how money works, right, in the sports world. So yeah, I mean, they're definitely trying to sell this as okay, we know it looks like a lot of tax money, but really it's not tax money. And that's sort of where this whole this TIF, tax increment financing thing, comes in, which obviously a lot of people in Chicago are familiar with. But you know, the idea is, we're not asking for public money. We're just asking that instead of paying you the taxes we would normally pay you, property taxes, sales taxes, we get to keep it. Now, if you think about it for a second, right? If one of us were to say that, I don't want money from the government. I just want you to return my income taxes back to me, right? It's the same thing, right? It's the exact same thing to the person not paying taxes. But you can claim that there's sort of this idea of, well, it's just not paying taxes, and that wouldn't exist if the you know, project weren't developed, right? It wouldn't be paying property taxes. It wouldn't be paying sales taxes. Sure, but those people who would be going and buying White Sox tickets or hot dogs or anything else, you know, in this South Loop site, if that isn't built, would be going and buying White Sox tickets and hot dogs and other things somewhere else in the city. So it really is just moving money from one place to another, except before this project is potentially built, those people buying things are paying taxes on it, and now it will suddenly be tax-free, and all those taxes will be kept by the White Sox and the developers. So it's a real problem, you know, not just in sports but all over the place, that, you know, developers are selling this as it's a free lunch. And, you know, every economist will tell you, if anybody tells you it's a free lunch, then hold on to your wallet.
I guess, like, one of the ways I guess I've tried to explain it is that, you know, if they could generate all this public money through extensions, that they theoretically could use it for other public needs. Is that realistic? Are there, you know, appropriations or earmarkings for this that it could only be used on, like, development projects? Or, you know, is this sapping away from public resources in a way that, you know, it could be perceived as?
There's two pieces to it. The hotel tax, as I understand it, is going to expire and could be renewed for anything that the legislature decides it to, right? You know, the legislature could just vote and say, when the hotel tax is done, we're going to have a new hotel tax and we're going to use it for something else, some other needs. Or it could say, we're going to not renew the hotel tax and just, you know, make it cheaper on people staying in hotels and maybe increase the hotel business because more people want to stay in Chicago. The other piece is, again, it's a little bit trickier because people, you know, aren't paying sales taxes if they're not on that site, if not going to that site, but they are somewhere else. And I think this is a big problem with TIFs. And there's been a lot of reporting, you know, in Chicago, I know, about the degree to which tax increment financing districts have sort of created this Swiss cheese map of property taxes in Chicago, where, you know, you used to have the entire city paying property taxes, and now there are so many holes in it because developers have been given, okay, we'll kick you back your property taxes, you don't have to pay any, that the rest of this remaining part of the city has to shoulder the entire property tax load. So that's another way to look at it, right? If a whole bunch of people move to this new neighborhood and it's not paying property taxes, who's paying for the schools for the kids who live there, right? Because it's not them.
So as is typical for these, there's a, you know, economic impact report that comes alongside of it. You know, there was a big figure in their initial presentation, and yesterday, you know, the White Sox issued a statement where they included something from Related Midwest, where they said that they will bring 10,000 construction jobs and 22,000 permanent new jobs to the city, as well as touting, you know, long-term benefits of having a tourist attraction in this area. What do we make of these? What should a common person make of these? Because these figures are seemingly pulled out of thin air. How grounded?
I think seemingly is probably understating it. Yeah, I mean, these numbers are literally pulled out of thin air, right? You know, they're consulting reports, they're PR documents, I've talked to people who've produced them, and the goal is not to try to figure out what the actual number is going to be. The goal is to find a way to justify a number that'll make the project look reasonable. You know, a friend of mine who used to work for a consulting company compared it to the old Calvin and Hobbes cartoon, where Calvin is doing a report about how bats are giant bugs, and Hobbes looks at him and he's like, I don't know if that's really true. And he says, oh, don't worry about it. I've got a clear plastic binder to put my report in. I'm guaranteed to get an A. It did not work out, spoiler, for Calvin very well, but it often works out really well for sports teams and developers because, you know, legislators are unfortunately really swayed by clear plastic binders, regardless of what's inside them.
I mean, my first thought is that creating permanent jobs with this White Sox stadium is aren't permanent jobs being pulled away from when they pull out of Bridgeport. I know there's plans to maybe put a, you know, soccer stadium there, but I can't imagine even if that one was thought through, that would really sustain the same level.
Right. And then you're pulling the soccer team out of Soldier Field. Right. I mean, it's just shuffling things around. And honestly, sports teams don't create an awful lot of jobs, right? That first of all, the most of the money goes towards the players. So it's really 26 jobs. And a lot of those players live outside the city. So they, you know, when they, you know, earn their paychecks, they don't immediately go out and go grocery shopping and, you know, buy up lots of stuff in the neighborhood, keep a lot of it and spend it in Florida in the winter. You know, on top of that, yeah, the average sports stadium, I think the estimate was that does about the same amount of business as like a mid-sized supermarket, which isn't nothing. But again, you have to remember people may be spending $50 a ticket, but they're only doing it once a day when the team is home during the season, and the rest of the year, you know, other 267 days a year, it's empty. So it really is not a huge economic catalyst. The rest of the development might be, but the rest of the development seems like it was, you know, Chicago already gave $700 million in tax breaks for that. I don't particularly know why the White Sox coming is going to make a neighborhood in that site more viable than it was otherwise.
I guess would the case be like putting the stadium here will justify a bunch of infrastructure investment that otherwise they were not getting over the hump or somehow? Is that kind of what the argument would be?
I mean, but the infrastructure is all getting paid for by the kickbacks, the tax money. So, right. So it's like, yeah, I mean, I guess you're saying, well, it's sort of like what the A's were saying when they were going to build a Howard Terminal on the waterfront in Oakland, is like, well, you know, we'll, you know, develop all this transportation infrastructure and everything. And, you know, we'll use it both for a stadium and for, you know, housing and other sort of multi-purpose uses, which is fine, but that still doesn't cut down on the fact that you're asking the public for $1 billion or more. And, you know, the fact that you're talking about $1 billion in new tax breaks on top of the old ones, it's like, so adding the White Sox to this and moving them is worth spending an extra $1 billion in city and state money. You really have to show your numbers there. And, you know, a one screen showing here's how many jobs will be created without any footnotes or any documentation is really not sufficient.
So I guess an element of it that I was very curious about and wondering if it was something that made for and if what would be effective for them is the structuring the deal where it would take care of the Bears like stadium debt financing. One, can you help me understand that? And two, is that something that's politically, I don't know, convincing to legislators who are trying to maybe push that obligation down the road?
I mean, politically convincing, I couldn't begin to guess, not being an Illinois legislator. But as far as understanding how it works, my understanding is it's like refinancing your mortgage, right? You know, if you still owe on your mortgage and you refinance it to pay off your current mortgage and then go buy a new house, that's kind of what you're doing. But the overall amount that you're spending is still the same, right? So you're going to have to be putting aside some money to pay off the what's currently owed on Soldier Field and on the White Sox Park before you start paying off the new stadium, which again is fine. You know, in terms of like how you borrow money, that's not a problem, but it doesn't really save you money anywhere, right? It just says, okay, we're going to pay off this current debt before we pay off the other debt. That's why I sometimes am a little bit hesitant to say, you know, oh, it's terrible if you are building a new stadium when you still haven't paid off the old one. It really doesn't matter all that much, right? You know, what order you pay things off in. It's just about how much money that you're spending. And, you know, that's my real concern here is that, you know, you still have the debt on the old one. That is something that is still, you know, is not going to go away regardless of how you refinance it. And then you're going to have to spend, you know, $1 billion in new money on top of the $700 million in the property tax kickbacks. So, you know, I it's an interesting sort of mechanism that they're using, and maybe it'll make some people feel a little bit better, but I would hope that most legislators would be able to see through, oh, yay, we're going to pay off Soldier Field, and be, we're paying off Soldier Field by taking on a whole bunch of new debt. That really doesn't help.
I guess, does it kick the can down the road for them in some way, or
if you're, sure, you know,
just worried about your term, I guess.
Sure. I mean, you know, I mean, that's always the way you want to do it, is make sure that, that, you know, your children are paying for it, or that your children are in office by then, you know, something like that. So I don't know. I we're still really early in the game here, right? You know, it's just been proposed. I imagine that if something gets built on that site, it may not be on that site. It may be somewhere else. It may not look like that. It may not have this financing plan. That's usually the way these things go, right? Is that by the time you eventually get to something that can agree on, they can be agreed on, you know, it's not exactly what was proposed in the first place. So some of this is just, you know, trial balloons, and seeing what gets shot down. And if this gets shot down, or part of it gets shot down, I am absolutely sure Jerry Reinsdorf will be happy to say, oh, I can't have that $1 billion. How about some other $1 billion?
I guess that leads me into two possible directions. Is one, it seems like a likely way for this to play out, but also it seems like Jerry Reinsdorf has done this successfully before. Is this something, you know, has demonstrated history that, you know, makes this a likely thing to be successful, as audacious as it sounds to us?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of his core strength, right? I mean, not only did he do it for the White Sox, but he actually did it for the Nationals, because MLB still owned the Expos at the time they were negotiating with Washington, D.C. And I would have to go back and check, but I'm pretty sure that he was one of the people in the room when they met with the mayor of D.C. at the time that the mayor said, okay, well, we'd love to have you come to town. In terms of building a stadium, we were thinking about a 2/3 public, 1/3 private split. And then either Reinsdorf or somebody else in the room, I think it was Reinsdorf, was the one who responded with, oh yeah, we were thinking 3/3, no thirds, and got away with it pretty much. So yes, this is clearly something he's very experienced at. On the other hand, he's also, you know, making a tremendous ask of something that's going to require the approval of both the city and the state. So he's got a couple of different, you know, he has a mayor to convince, a governor to convince, a council to convince, a legislature to convince. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I you know, there certainly wasn't a celebratory announcement after the meeting they just had with the folks in the legislature, which could be they're just playing things close to the vest, or it could be that they still got a ways to go. We really just don't know yet. So I would say, it's even just looking at historical cases, I think it's way too early to say what's going to happen. I mean, if you had asked me a year and a half ago about what was going on with the Oakland A's, I would have said, well, they're clearly going to get this new stadium in Oakland, because, you know, they've just gone so far and they've gotten, you know, most of the money approved, and it's just obviously happening. And if you had asked me 6 months ago, I might have said, oh, well, clearly they're moving to Las Vegas. They just got all this money approved and they've got a plan. And now who knows where they're going to go? So, you know, I would hesitate to place any bets, unless you got really good odds, on what's going to happen with the White Sox in the end.
We can always look to the A's as a reminder that life is chaos. I'm speaking to an audience of people who care probably an inordinate degree about sports and baseball and think it's maybe more important than they should.
That would also be me.
Sure.
As a baseball fan, not just as someone who writes about this.
I'm out here in Arizona talking to relievers about pitch mix. So like I'm representative of America's obsession with sports. Do you see any tide turning, or people understanding, you know, the costs of, you know, supporting kind of whatever the team wants at all? I mean, the Nashville mayor is an example, but are you seeing any pushback to this mounting up over the years?
You know, it's interesting. When my co-author, Joanna Kagan, and I first started researching this over 25 years ago, we were under the impression that, you know, it was, you know, on one side were people who were concerned about public spending, and on the other side were sports fans who just want to see whatever is good for the team. And we very quickly were, you know, discovered that we were completely wrong, which we should have realized, both being sports fans ourselves. But, you know, there are plenty of sports fans who are out there saying, you know, I pay enough for tickets. I don't see why I should have to give my tax money as well. Or, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf has mismanaged this team enough. I don't know why we should give him even more money. You know, sports fans are generally pretty savvy, at least about, you know, their ownership and about, you know, who would be getting the money in which case. And I think, honestly, it's not going to help him any more than it's helping John Fisher, owner of the A's, get money approved. That the fact that the White Sox right now are not a team that anybody's going to be really excited about giving money to, right? You know, I mean, they're, let's put it charitably, they're in a downswing, okay? And that's not something that's going to get people excited about, like, you know, oh man, you know, we've got to make sure that we keep the team, we keep it, you know, give it enough money to be able to retain all these great players that they have, when, you know, the great players they have are, you know, Nicky Lopez, I think, is the second baseman. Nothing against Nicky Lopez. I saw him hit a home run against the Mets last year and pitch an inning, but you know, he's not going to be the missing piece that sends him to the World Series.
I mean, it sounds like a weird thing to base billions in public spending around, but would this be, if they were winning, if they're coming off four straight playoff appearances, do you think this would be almost an entirely different conversation based on how it's covered?
I think it would be easier. Yeah. I think there, right, there are two ways that you can, if you're a team owner, you can go about this. One is, my team is so terrible that we will never win if we don't get a new stadium. And the other is, my team is so great that we deserve a new stadium, you know, to that will match the glory of our team. The Yankees were great at saying that. And the latter one works a lot better, if only because if you're trying to get people afraid of losing the team or excited about a new home for the team, if you're trying, you know, there need to be actual fans who care. And right now, you know, for the White Sox and the A's and a bunch of other teams, the Royals probably, there just aren't that many fans who care that much. You know, they're just like, eh, you know, if it's not really, you know, this is not my priority. Or, you know, even if you're a diehard fan, it's not like you're going to get really excited about, you know, well, I have faith that Jerry Reinsdorf is the guy who can, you know, make this thing happen and make it work. So, I mean, the long way around, but like, I think the answer is there's a little more skepticism and there's a little more awareness, certainly, than there was 25, 30 years ago of some of the economic studies and some of the, you know, it has been reported a little bit more that, you know, everything shows that these deals are boondoggles. But, you know, unfortunately, what the fans think or what taxpayers think is not necessarily what is going to hold sway, right? It's what elected officials think. And that is going to depend on, you know, who the people are, what the people are saying at the parties that they go to. And unfortunately, that hasn't changed an awful lot in the last, you know, 20, 30 years. So I don't know. I mean, the upside, again, is that there are a lot of hurdles that the White Sox have to jump through before they can get their $1.7 billion. The other side is that even if they fail this year, even if they fail next year, they only have to win once, right? I mean, the Minnesota Twins spent 10 years not getting a new stadium. And then once they managed to find the right formula that they were able to get it approved. And now they got their new stadium and it doesn't matter all the times they lost.
Is there a way to get people to, how would you try to express in 30 seconds or a minute what the cost would be of just, like, you know, throwing public money in? Because I feel like it's hard for people to see the immediate cause and effect relationship of what this does to the budget or what services get, you know, degraded as a result of this. But how do you, you know, make it real for people?
Yeah, I mean, I think money is money, right? I mean, with property taxes, it's directly coming out of the school's budget. And with everything else, you know, that sales tax money is money that the city could have to spend on literally anything else, or the state. And you know, it's not like you can point to one thing and say, you know, they can't afford to do this because they're building a stadium. But you could point to literally anything. You know, if there's any project that the city is saying, oh, we don't have enough money to pay for, then that's something that could be considered if you weren't spending it on this big development. You know, again, going back to the very beginnings of this, we got started in this because Joanna's from Cleveland, and Cleveland was talking about building a new stadium for the Browns at a time when its schools were literally in receivership because they were so poorly run. And Rudy Giuliani was mayor of New York and was talking about a new stadium for the Yankees at the same time he was closing libraries because he said there wasn't enough money for it to pay for libraries. And it kind of stood out as, huh, you seem to have enough money for this one thing and not the other. And I guess the last thing I would say on this is just, even if you think a new stadium would be a good idea, right? I've been to the current White Sox stadium. It's not my favorite. I don't know that the new one would be any better necessarily, but you know, you could certainly make an argument for the idea that it might be nice. Is when you're asked for $1.7 billion, should the first response be, yeah, okay. Or should it be, well, we don't have $1.7 billion. What can we offer you that's a lot less than that, right? You start with a lower price, because I am sure that Jerry Reinsdorf is not asking for this money because if he got $1.65 billion, it would be completely impossible for him to pay for this, right? There is probably a price point somewhere lower that he would be willing and able to accept. And the job of elected officials is, at the very least, even if they're not going to say no, to say, okay, well, we're going to try and give you as little as possible. Because that's kind of our job, is not to just throw public money around willy-nilly. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's not that often that elected officials play that kind of hardball, but it's been done and it can be done. And, you know, usually the first way you do it is by saying no to the initial ask, like in any negotiation, you know, like if you're dealing with your 3-year-old, can I have ice cream for dinner 5 nights a week? No. Can I have it 4 nights a week? No. And that's where the real negotiating begins.
That's the secret of business right there.
And parenting.
Neil, thank you so much for joining us. I so appreciate getting your insight. It's very valuable, and hopefully it'll get through to our audience a bit. But thank you again.
Sure thing. Appreciate
it. That will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to the Sox Machine Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sox Machine and follow us on social media at Sox Machine. You can follow James Fegan on social media at JR Fegan and follow me at Sox Machine_Josh. If you enjoy our work, you can get more by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/Sox Machine. Our Patreon supporters make it possible to send James all the way down to Arizona to continue covering the Chicago White Sox spring training. We've been getting great content and great insight as well. So thank you to your support to making that happen. If you haven't signed up a Patreon yet, to gain full access of our White Sox coverage, go to patreon.com/Sox Machine, and monthly plans start at $5, and you will save money as well on an annual subscription. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball. Alongside James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening.